from Father Lacombe, wherein he wrote that God had discovered to him that he had great designs in regard to me. Let them be, then said I to myself, either of justice or mercy, all is equal to me. I still had Geneva deeply at heart, but said nothing of it to anybody, waiting for God to make known to me all his powerful will, and fearing lest any stratagem of the devil should be concealed therein, that might tend to draw me out of my proper place or steal me out of my condition. The more I saw my own misery, incapacity, and nothingness, the plainer it appeared that they rendered me fitter for the designs of God, whatever they might be. O my Lord, said I, take the weak and the wretched to do thy works, that thou mayest have all the glory, and that man may attribute nothing of them to himself. If thou shouldst take a person of eminence and great talents, one might attribute to him something. But if thou takest me, it will be manifest that thou alone art the author of whatever good shall be done. I continued quiet in my spirit, leaving the whole affair to God, being satisfied, if he should require anything of me, that he would furnish me with the means of performing it. I held myself in readiness with a full resolution to execute his orders whenever he should make them known, though it were to the laying down of my life. I was released from all crosses. I resumed my care of the sick and dressing of wounds, and God gave me to cure the most desperate. When surgeons could do no more, it was then that God made me cure them. Oh, the joy that accompanied me everywhere, finding still him who had united me to himself, in his own immensity and boundless vastitude. Oh, how truly did I experience what he said in the gospel, by the four evangelists and by one of them twice over. Whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it, and whosoever will save his life shall lose it. When I had lost all created supports and even divine ones, I then found myself happily compelled to fall into the pure divine, and to fall into it through all those very things which seemed to remove me further from it. In losing all the gifts with all their supports, I found the giver. In losing the sense and perception of thee in myself, I found thee, O my God, to lose thee no more in thyself, in thine own immutability. O poor creatures who pass all your time in feeding upon the gifts of God, and think therein to be the most favored and happy. How I pity you if you stop here, short of the true rest, and cease to go forward to God himself, through the loss of those cherished gifts which you now delight in. How many pass all their lives in this way and think highly of themselves? There are others who, being called of God to die to themselves, yet pass all their time in a dying life, in inward agonies, without ever entering into God through death, in a total loss of self, because they are always willing to retain something under plausible pretext, and so never lose themselves to the whole extent of the designs of God. They never enjoy God in all his fullness, which is a loss that cannot be perfectly known in this life. O my Lord, what happiness did I not largely taste in my solitude and with my little family, where nothing interrupted my tranquility. As I was in the country, the slender age of my children did not require my application too much. They being in good hands, I retired a great part of the day into a wood. I passed as many days of happiness as I had had months of sorrow. Thou, O my God, dealt by me, as by thy servant Job, rendering me double for all thou hadst taken, and delivering me from all my crosses. Thou gavest me a marvelous facility to satisfy everyone. What was surprising now was that my mother-in-law, who had ever been complaining of me, without my doing anything more than usual to please her, declared that none could be better satisfied with me than she was. Such as before she had cried me down the most, now testified their sorrow for it and became full of my praises. My reputation was established with much more advantage, in proportion as it had appeared to be lost. I remained in an entire peace, as well without as within. It seemed to me that my soul was become like New Jerusalem, spoken of in the Apocalypse, prepared as a bride for her husband, and where there is no more sorrow or sighing. I had a perfect indifference to everything that is here, a union so great with the will of God that my own will seemed entirely lost. My soul could not incline itself on one side or the other, since another will had taken the place of its own, but only nourished itself with the daily providences of God. It now found a will all divine, yet was so natural and easy that it found itself infinitely more free than ever it had been in its own. These dispositions have still subsisted and still grown stronger and more perfect even to this hour. I could neither desire one thing nor another, but was content with whatever fell. If any in the house asked me, "Will you have this or that?" then I was surprised to find that there was nothing left in me which could desire or choose. I was as if everything of smaller matters quite disappeared, a higher power having taken up and filled all their place. I even perceived no more that soul which he had formerly conducted by his crook and his staff, because now he alone appeared to me, my soul having given up its place to him. It seemed to me as if it was wholly and altogether passed into its God, to make but one and the same thing with him, even as a little drop of water cast into the sea receives the qualities of the sea. O union of unity, demanded of God by Jesus Christ for men and merited by him, how strong is this in a soul that has become lost in its God? After the consummation of this divine unity, the soul remains hid with Christ in God. This happy loss is not like those transient ones which ecstasy operates, which are rather an absorption than union, because the soul afterwards finds itself again with all its own disposition. Here she feels that prayer fulfilled, John 17:21, that they all may be one as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us. Chapter 28. I was obliged to go to Paris about some business. Having entered into a church that was very dark, I went up to the first confessor I found, whom I did not know, nor have ever seen since. I made a simple and short confession, but to the confessor himself I said not a word. He surprised me, saying, "I know not who you are, whether maid, wife, or widow, but I feel a strong inward motion to exhort you to do what the Lord has made known to you, that he requires of you. I have nothing else to say." I answered him, "Father, I am a widow who have little children. What else could God require of me but to take due care of them in their education?" He replied, "I know nothing about this. You know if God manifests to you that he requires something of you, there is nothing in the world which ought to hinder you from doing his will. One may have to leave one's children to do that." This surprised me much. However, I told him nothing of what I felt about Geneva. I disposed myself submissively to quit everything, if the Lord required it of me. I did not look upon it as a good I aspired to, or a virtue I hope to acquire, or as anything extraordinary, or as an act that would merit some return on God's part, but only gave myself up to be led in the way of my duty, whatever it might be, feeling no distinction between my own will and the will of God in me. In this disposition I lived with my family in the greatest tranquility, until one of my friends had a great desire to go on a mission to Siam. He lived 20 leagues from my house. As he was ready to make a vow to this purpose, he found himself stopped, with an impulse to come and speak to me. He came immediately, and as he had some reluctance to declare his mind to me, he went to read prayers in my chapel, hoping God would be satisfied with his making the vow. As he was performing divine service in my hearing, he was stopped again. He left the chapel to come and speak to me. He then told me his intention. Though I had no thought of saying anything positive to him, I felt an impression in my soul to relate to him my case and the idea I had for a long time past for Geneva. I told him a dream I had which appeared to me supernatural. When I had done, I felt a strong impulse to say to him, "You must go to Siam, and you must also serve me in this affair. It is for that end God has sent you hither. I desire you to give me your advice." After 3 days, having considered the matter and consulted the Lord in it, he told me that he believed I was to go thither, but to be the better assured of it, it would be needful to see the Bishop of Geneva. If he approved of my design, it would be a sign that it was from the Lord. If not, I must drop it. To go to Annecy, to speak to the bishop, and to bring me a faithful account. As he was advanced in years, we were deliberating in what way he should take so long a journey, when there came two travelers, who told us the bishop was at Paris. This I looked on as an extraordinary providence. He advised me to write to Father Lacombe and recommend the affair to his prayers, as he was in that country. He then spoke to the bishop at Paris. I, having occasion to go thither, spoke to him also. I told him that my design was to go into the country, to employ there my substance, to erect an establishment for all such as should be willing truly to serve God, and to give themselves unto him without reserve, and that many of the servants of the Lord had encouraged me thereto. The bishop approved of the design. He said, there were new Catholics going to establish themselves at Gex, near Geneva, and that it was a providential thing. I answered him that I had no vocation for Gex, but for Geneva. He said, I might go from hence to that city. I thought this was a way in which divine providence had opened, for my taking this journey was the less difficulty. As I yet knew nothing positive of what the Lord would acquire at my hand, I was not willing to oppose anything. Who knows, said I, but the will of the Lord is only that I should contribute to this establishment. I went to see the prioress of the new Catholics at Paris. She seemed much rejoiced and assured me she would gladly join me. As she is a great servant of God, this confirmed me. When I could reflect a little, which was but seldom, I thought God would make choice of her for her virtue, and me for my worldly substance. When I inadvertently looked at myself, I could not think God would make use of me. But when I saw the things in God, then I perceived that the more I was nothing, the fitter I was for his designs. As I saw nothing in myself extraordinary, and looked on myself as being in the lowest stage of perfection, and imagined that an extraordinary degree of inspiration was necessary for extraordinary designs, this made me hesitate and fear deception. It was not that I was in fear of anything as to my perfection and salvation, which I had referred to God, but I was afraid of not doing his will by being too ardent and hasty in doing it. I went to consult Father Claude Martin. At that time he gave me no decisive answer, demanding time to pray about it, saying he would write to me what should appear to him to be the will of God concerning me. I found it hard to get to speak to Monsieur Bertaux, both on account of his being difficult of access and of my knowing how he condemned things extraordinary or out of the common road. Being my director, I submitted against my own views or judgment to what he said, laying down all my own experiences when duty required me to believe and obey. I thought, however, that in an affair of this importance, I ought to address myself to him and prefer his sense of the matter to that of everyone beside. Persuaded he would infallibly tell me the will of God, I went to him then, and he told me that my design was of God, and that he had had a sense given him of God for some time past, that he required something of me. I therefore returned home to set everything in order. I loved my children much, having great satisfaction in being with them, but resigned all to God to follow his will. On my return from Paris, I left myself in the hands of God, resolved not to take any step, either to make the thing succeed or to hinder it, either to advance or retard it, but singly to move as he should be pleased to direct me. I had mysterious dreams which portended nothing but crosses, persecutions, and afflictions. My heart submitted to whatever it should please God to ordain. I had one which was very significant. Being employed in some necessary work, I saw near me a little animal which appeared to be dead. This animal I took to be the envy of some persons, which seemed to have been dead for some time. I took it up, and as I saw it strove hard to bite me, and that it magnified to the eye, I cast it away. I found thereupon that it filled my fingers with sharp-pointed prickles like needles. I came to one of my acquaintance to get him to take them out, but he pushed them deeper in and left me so, till a charitable priest of great merit, whose countenance is still present with me, though I have not yet seen him but believe I shall before I die, took this animal up with a pair of pincers. As soon as he held it fast, those sharp prickles fell off of themselves. I found that I easily entered into a place which before had seemed inaccessible, and although the mire was up to my girdle, in my way to a deserted church, I went over it without getting any dirt. It will be easy to see in the sequel what this signified. Doubtless you will wonder that I, who make so little account of things extraordinary, relate dreams. I do it for two reasons. First, out of fidelity, having promised to omit nothing of what should come to my mind. Secondly, because it is the method God makes use of to communicate himself to faithful souls, to give them foretokens of things to come which concern them. Thus, mysterious dreams are found in many places of the Holy Scriptures. They have singular properties as, 1, to leave a certainty that they are mysterious and will have their effect in their season. 2, to be hardly ever effaced out of the memory, though one forgets all others. 3, to redouble the certainty of their truth every time one thinks of them. 4, they generally leave a certain unction, a divine sense or savor at one's waking. I received letters from sundry religious persons, some of whom live far from me and from one another, relating to my going forth in the service of God, and some of them to Geneva in particular, in such a manner as surprised me. One of them intimated that I must there bear the cross and be persecuted, and another of them that I should be eyes to the blind, feet to the lame, and arms to the maimed. The ecclesiastic, or chaplain, of our house was much afraid lest I was under delusion. What at that time greatly confirmed me was Father Claude Martin, whom I mentioned above, wrote to me that, after many prayers, the Lord had given him to know that he required me at Geneva and to make a free sacrifice of everything to him. I answered him that perhaps the Lord required of me nothing more than a sum of money to assist in founding an institution which was going to be established there. He replied that the Lord had made him know that he wanted not my worldly substance but myself. At the very same time with this letter, I received one from Father Lacombe, who wrote to me that the Lord had given him a certainty, as he had done to several of his good and faithful servants and handmaids, and he wanted me at Geneva. The writers of these two letters lived above 150 leagues from each other, yet both wrote the same thing. I could not but be somewhat surprised to receive at the same time two letters exactly alike, from two persons living so far distant from each other. As soon as I became fully convinced of its being the will of the Lord and saw nothing on earth capable of detaining me, my senses had some pain about leaving my children, and upon reflecting thereon, a doubt seized my mind. Oh, my Lord, had I rested on myself or on the creatures, I would have revolted, leaned on a broken reed which would have pierced my hand. But relying on thee alone, what needed I to fear? I resolved then to go, regardless of the censures of such as understand not what it is to be a servant of the Lord, and to receive and obey his orders. I firmly believed that he, by his providence, would furnish the means necessary for the education of my children. I put everything by degrees in order, the Lord alone being my guide. Chapter 29. While Providence on the one hand appointed my forsaking all things, it seemed on the other to make my chains the stronger and my separation the more blamable. None could receive stronger marks of affection from one's own mother than those which I received at this time from my mother-in-law. Even the least sickness which befell me made her very uneasy. She said she had veneration for my virtue. I believe what contributed not a little to this change was that she had heard that three persons had offered suit to me, and that I had refused them, although their fortune and quality were quite superior to mine. She remembered how she had